that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape, well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, aka Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits.
What's funny when I think back of how many times I could have gotten myself either in trouble or hurt or just anything. Not too many times, but definitely a few. I know there's a few with you as well.
What do you think is the dumbest thing you did? Like the thing that you think, wow, I really dodged a bullet.
Good question. I remember there's some car accidents, but those weren't really my fault.
Yeah.
So the dumbest thing that I did where I could have really...
All right, I'll tell you one. I've got that. So it wasn't me. I will preface that. But since I was in the apartment, I feel like I could have gotten into a significant amount of trouble had anything bad happened. The building I grew up in, or at least when I was a teenager, we lived on the 44th floor, and we had a friend who lived somewhere on a high floor close by. And we didn't have a terrace, but he had a terrace. And so one day I go over, may or may not have had a couple of drinks, and I was probably 16 or 17 at the time. And he's like, oh, check this out. And then another friend came over, like this really kind of nefarious character. I think he's since in jail for drug dealing or something like that. But they go and bring out a bunch of plastic bags, and they start filling it with water and dropping it off of the terrace. And I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy. Like, I'm not going to have anything to do with that. So I stand back. Now, at that point, I should have left the room, left the apartment. And then, what they call it, like water bombs or something. Yeah. But then he's like, I got an idea. Let's throw a nuclear bomb. And then they run out and come back with a giant trash bag from the recycling room or from like the trash room. And they proceeded to put that in the bathtub and fill that with water. So again, I'm not involved in the preparation, but I didn't stop them. Yeah. And they tossed it off the roof. And like, thank God that didn't fall on. And I mean, if the other bags would have fallen on somebody, you know, it would have been, we'd all have been in jail. But that one flew over, and like somebody had opened a car door as the thing was flying down. That was like the dumbest thing I was ever, involved with. And then I do remember that day, like, they must have known it was his apartment because, like, he had a security guard, like, banging on the door, and he just kind of hid, and we were all kind of, like, just terrified, like, oh, crap, this is not good. And then that was the end of that, and that never happened. And then after that, I did not hang out with that friend anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, that was really dumb. And that's a situation. Whenever that question comes up, I'm like, yeah, that's it, because that was dumb. Like, that could have changed the course of my life being in that situation.
Yeah, well, that's pretty crazy.
Do you know who it is? Okay, yeah.
Probably not as serious as yours, but I remember there was a time I was 15, 14, and I was just hanging out with some other high school friends, and we were in Washington Square Park, and we really wanted to go and purchase something that at the time was not really legal and probably shouldn't have been playing around with as a 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I remember just sort of searching around, and almost on any day we would have just found someone and got what we wanted. But that day, just something felt weird, and we asked around and we couldn't really find anything. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go home. And then sure enough, 10 minutes after I left, the police raided the whole park.
Yeah.
And made a whole bunch of arrests.
Oh, wow.
So now, look, if I was 15, what was going to happen? Nothing was going to happen. I wouldn't have spent any time in jail. Who knows? Just if I had anything on me, which I try, I didn't really do very much as a teen. It was just the timing, it's just timing. So, that was pretty dumb, I thought, just putting myself in that situation. But, fortunately, I skirted trouble and that was
mostly skirted trouble ever since, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much once I got into my early 20s, I was like, I'm done with, doing anything dumb like that. So you live and learn.
Yeah.
You think you're invincible.
And you're lucky. I mean, some people don't have, the one dumb thing, they, end up, suffering or paying for that the rest of their lives.
Definitely, I've definitely done some things that were actually pretty dumb in terms of working out.
Yeah.
You know, but before we get into
you and your segues.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so we got an interesting study for this week. It's about organized sports not being enough to fulfill activity requirements. Hmm. So that's kind of like the title. It was Kansas State University conducted the study. And basically, so Katie Heinrich is the associate professor of exercise, behavioral science, and director of the kinesiology department's functional intensity training lab. Hope I got all that in. And said that children need about 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity every day. Mm. So basically what they found in the study is that only 30% of practice time is actually spent producing moderate to vigorous activities. So what they found was that between coaching and, you know, the, you know, kids being huddled around and talking and chatting, that only 30% of that hour is actually spent, you know, producing the amount of activity that's necessary for kids. And so, you know, it's important, you know, that now that stuff is important. Obviously it provides structure, companionship. You know, there are a lot of things that are important for that, you know, the time that you spend talking to the coach, talking to each other, motivating each other, but it doesn't meet the activity requirement. And they actually recommend that parents allow the kids to have another 40 minutes of playtime throughout each day in order to make up for it. So basically, if you're a parent, you have a kid, activity is incredibly important. And I think we see that with the lack of emphasis on physical education in schools, in many school districts, and then, you know, the prevalence of video games and social media and the internet, kids are a lot less active, I think, than they were.
Sure.
And there are a lot more sedentary activities available to them to keep them sedentary. So if you're a parent, just enrolling your kid in the basketball, you know, class, or having them play on the basketball team or the baseball team or the soccer team, that's not necessarily going to be enough to meet whatever their activity requirements are. And it's important to find and make sure that they're getting that extra 40 minutes, you know, a day in some way, shape, or form.
So while I'm going to somewhat agree with this study, I have some big questions. First off, what is the age group?
That is a good question.
Because that makes a huge difference.
Whoa.
What type of organized sports?
Well,
because I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
When I was on the team, the wrestling team in high school, now granted, I was an older teen. That was, you kidding me?
Yeah.
Right? And I think high school athletics, the practices, like, what are we talking about? Are we talking about baseball where a lot of it is sitting around? Not. Are we talking about the swim team or the gymnastics? Or are they taking all the sports into consideration,
so I think that, so,
and meeting in the middle where some sports might be.
So that's a good question.
Swimming, all you're doing is swimming. Of course it's going
to
meet the activity.
So you have to take into account those things into account. So obviously, if you've got a kid that's on the wrestling team as a freshman in high school, they're probably meeting their activity requirements. But if you have an 8-year old who's playing, you know, soccer, then they might not be. So I think,
so
obviously there's some variability involved in this. But I think the idea being, though, that you're just enrolling the kid in soccer classes or whatever it is may not be enough.
That's the big thing.
It's like, or just putting your kid in dance. Like, okay, we're going to sign you up for dance classes, which are an hour. But even though that's an hour, you know, you've got instruction, you've got technique work, you've got stretching, you've got, you know, all this stuff involved that doesn't meet that. So, yeah, so you're right. But
really brings is up what you're about to say is just to be very aware that just because the kid is going for an hour doesn't mean that entire hour is for fitness.
Yeah.
Right. Because of it. So just be aware. And then also be aware what class is this? You may need to supplement it with others. So I think the biggest thing that comes out of this study is just not to assume.
Yeah.
Don't assume that your kid is getting a great workout just because. Maybe he is, maybe she's not, but just be aware of it. Maybe go and maybe show to the parent, go and check out one of the classes and see how much activity are they actually getting in.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
So, all right,
so you developed today's episode, so I'm kind of going to hand it over to you,
what do you
to
think
an extent.
Yeah. Now, I think the dumbest thing I ever did, dumbest thing I ever did in terms of working out and fitness was I was taking the supplement. We'll get into the supplement aspect of this. I took two Xenadrine, and then I forgot, and then I took two more, which could have been really bad for my health. And then I worked out, so I guess I was young. I was okay, worked out, but that could have been dangerous.
Yeah.
And so that, which brings us to the sort of, well, brings us to the title of the episode, which is aesthetics versus health. Mm-hmm. And when what you're doing for fitness, what you're working out, may not actually be great for fitness, may be good for aesthetics, but might actually be harming you in terms of your health.
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything that you think that, I'm sure we all have.
Yeah, I mean, everything comes down to moderation.
Yes.
So when it comes to exercise, if your primary focus is aesthetics, there are often going to be things that you're going to be doing more than you really should be, or less than you should be, depending on what, you know, if we're talking about diet. And you want to get ripped, then you're probably going to be eating fewer calories or fewer calories from fat than you probably should be. So yeah, there is definitely a, or from carbs, depending on the type of diet you're on. But yeah, there's definitely extremes involved when aesthetics or even performance
are involved. Bodybuilders are not necessarily the healthiest people.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to go through a list of different either exercises or activities or sort of approaches that might actually be harming you, even though you get benefits from, you know, aesthetic benefits from it. And the first thing is either having a full range of motion or too deep of a range of motion. Mm-hmm. And the exercise that comes to mind is the bench press.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you sort of preach this, that a lot of people like to go down all the way and touch their chest because they think that it gives them the best look, you know, for whatever reason. But we know that that can be harmful.
Well, yeah, that definitely, like a bench press, like once you get past the bar, like let's say once you get past the upper part of your arm, the humerus being kind of parallel to the torso, then a lot of the strain gets shifted over to the shoulders. So kind of when you go from that point up, it's more the chest and the triceps are more involved in the movement. And when you go from that point down, it becomes more of a strain on the shoulders. So especially if you have particularly weak shoulders, or if there's some kind of pre-existing injury, then doing that full range bench press could be potentially be harmful to the chest. Now, so there are many people, bodybuilders, weightlifters, are going to swear by doing that full range. And so I'm not going to argue over the aesthetic benefits. I've heard, you know, and read arguments that it doesn't help much. I've heard arguments and read arguments that you need that to get the fully developed chest. I don't, you know, that regardless, you know, we'll say this assuming that it does benefit you aesthetically. There is, as you get heavier in weight, there is a greater risk of injury, to the chest, again, or to the shoulders. So yeah, that's one of those exercises, like high, you know, again, it's like kind of risk rewards. You have to decide, like if you're a weightlifter, if you're doing that as a sport, then obviously that's part of your sport. So you're going to have to deal with that. It's just part of the risk of participating in that sport. You know, every sport has its risks. But if you're just trying to look good, then you have to decide, well, is it worth it? Or can I find other exercises that might, you know, get me the same benefit without potentially injuring the shoulders? And then if you're going to do the full range, you know, it's really important to then progress into it, to do the right stretches, to get, you know, develop that and not just go right into like deep full range bench presses with heavy weights.
Hmm. So the second thing is, you know, might be obvious, but people do it anyway. It's pretty obvious that smoking is bad for your health, but people still smoke. Mm-hmm. And that is taking steroids. Mm-hmm. So clearly you're going to get, if you work out, you can look great. You get some big muscular development, but we know that steroids, especially if it's not administered by a health professional, can really have detrimental effects.
So this is one of those topics where I really would love to have an expert on at some point to talk about, because it's just an interesting subject in itself. So there are definitely those that believe that in the right quantities, that steroids really are not harmful to you. And again, it's not my area of expertise, so I'm not going to argue one way or another. One thing that we do know is that doing it to extremes is detrimental to your health. So we could see that, you know, the all levels that are the levels that are done, you know, in, let's say, bodybuilding, that's an extreme, and that is something that is detrimental to your health. And we, you know, there are a number of instances of people, you know, who do suffer from a variety of health issues,
organ failure,
that are almost definitely related to steroid use. So we'll say, like, the extreme use of steroids is definitely bad. But again, it comes down to, you know, that's really risk reward. Like, are you, you know, if you're aware, for some people, and I've talked to people, you know, that have this attitude, that they do it at a level that they know is probably bad for their health, but they're willing to do it because they want that physical benefit right now. And in some sense, like, why, you know, a lot of, you know, even like the cells in your body, I think, I forget if it's 10 or 20 years, but something like a huge amount of the cells in your body are completely different in 20 years from what they are now. Like, I think there's a couple things in the brain that might be the same. Otherwise, like, everything changes over. So in a way, for like, for all intents and purposes, you're a different physical human being in whatever the amount of time is. Again, I didn't research this, so otherwise I would try to have a better number than this, but whatever it is, like 10 to 20 years, right? So you're a completely different person. So why should you now care about you in 10 years any more than you would care about anybody right now? Like, why focus on that when you can focus on yourself right now? And so for some people, that's their attitude. It's like, I want to look good right now. My goal is to be ripped and to be huge. And I don't care about that guy in 10 years. That guy in 10 years might get hit by a truck, or might fall out of a window or whatever. Like, why do I need to spend any time focusing on it? So it does become, and maybe I'll ask you, like, what do you think? What's your thought on that? Like, where do you think that's a good, valid reasoning, or would you try to dissuade somebody from usage after them giving you that explanation?
You know that I believe in the fitness is, you know, or workouts and good dieting is money in the fitness bank. So I don't believe in that. I believe that, you know, good habits over the course of your lifetime. I believe, I've certainly done things like put off things that I should have done and say, oh, my future self will take care of it. But I don't personally, that's not what I would prescribe.
But remember, so now your primary focus in fitness, though, is maintaining your health as long as possible, maintaining longevity, right? Like, that would, I would, not put
now it
mouth,
is,
right?
Now it is.
But that person, that's not that person's goal. That person's goal is, I want to get huge and ripped as quickly as possible. I don't care about the, you know, 10 years from now, I'll deal with it. So you're actively thinking about, you know, you're actively considering that your decisions now will you know, there'll be consequences down the line, and you want to be able to, as much as you can, control those consequences. Where that person doesn't care about the consequences, they just want to be big and ripped. So would you still try to dissuade them?
I would tell them that if you're basically say, I don't know if I would try to dissuade them, but I would say, look, this is what you're dealing with in the future. If you're willing to accept that, then it's your body. You have the right to do with it what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I think that's essentially, you know, mostly my attitude as well, is that, you know, you, as long as you're aware of the risks, I think that's important. I think where you run into issues is you'll get some people that will just completely say, like, there are no side effects to doing steroids. Yeah. And it's like, again, we don't know at moderate levels. We don't know what the, you know, if there really are significant effects. It may even be good for you. You know, there's that documentary, Bigger, Faster, Stronger, that kind of was a little eye opening. And there've been a couple interesting books.
If it was administered and properly, again, like, I don't, you had someone who's professional doing it, and you know that what you were getting was clean and you know, not made in a bathtub somewhere.
So I mean, it's one of the things where, yeah, we don't, you know, at moderate levels, maybe, but we don't know enough. Or at least
certainly not qualified.
Yeah, we're not qualified enough. But yeah, at high levels, and especially levels when you see guys that are, you know, in the magazines, and I mean, it's like, it's a lot. Real, yeah.
And not just steroids, but supplements in general. There are a lot of supplements that in the short term do work. Like, I remember we took Xenadrine and I thought I looked awesome, but it was not good. There was a lot of caffeine in there. It dehydrated us. It was, you know, it was taking the water and putting out of our system, and it probably, we took it for short term, only short term, gladly, but who knows what some of these supplements that dehydrate you and have a lot of caffeine, and what it does for the heart and the liver and just in organs, kidneys. And
well, that's another problem is that with the supplement industry, it's not really regulated. Again, going back to, actually, it's an interesting thing that's brought up in that documentary as well, is like kind of how the supplement industry works and how things are marketed, and that they're really, the regulation just isn't there. Kind of things are regulated like after the fact, you know, where you getting a drug on the market takes years and years of research and studies and, you know, really to prove that it works. But to get a supplement on the market, you it's a much easier process.
Sure.
And then if it's harmful, you kind of like deal with that after the fact, which is a little strange.
That's what people did with, you know, the Stacker, with the Ephedra. The Ephedra was in, it was out, it was in, it was out.
There was that dealing with it. There was a jacked, Jack 3D. I took that stuff. That made me feel that's drugs. And then whatever, they had to like change the formulation or something. Something horrible in it. I forget it was a while back. But definitely supplementation can be a challenge, which is why we try to, I always kind of preach like stick with, if you eat healthy and you have your caffeine, you'll be okay. Yeah. And drink water, have your caffeine, eat healthy. Will generally be better than trying a lot. Because a lot of the supplements just aren't effective, too. I think a lot of it's just like a placebo effect.
So, all right. The next thing that one might be doing that looks good but may not be best for their health are exercises that put a lot of stress on the joint. And the one that really comes to mind is the leg extension.
Yeah. So, like you said, extension's a good example, because I think for a lot of people, if you're bodybuilding, it's a great exercise for the vastus medialis, which is that like the teardrop muscle. If you want to get that really that nice, like, kind of solid teardrop, leg extension is probably the best exercise for that. But the problem with the leg extension is, especially during certain parts of the range, is it creates a lot of shearing forces on the knee, which can potentially lead to injuries. So, there's an issue with certain exercises like that. We talked about, with the, full range bench press, like preacher curls, where, not that they're terrible, because, again, like bodybuilders will swear by a lot of these exercises, and they are effective for what they are, but there is a higher risk of developing or dealing with injuries for them. So you kind of have to decide, again, risk reward. So if you're a bodybuilder and you need that teardrop, you're going to probably need to be doing some heavy leg extensions, which is probably not going to be good for the joint. But again, if the reward is being, having the most ripped aesthetic body possible, then it might be worth the risk. You just have to know that down the line it's going to affect you. I was going back to, bodybuilding or the steroid use. Oh man, I had a thought, and then the thought left, and it had something to do with bodybuilding. But whatever the case is, if you kind of have to, as long as you accept it and you say, okay, I'm gonna do this now, but it's gonna, down the line, it might help me perform better, might help me, win the competition, but I'm gonna have to deal with the consequences later. As long as you can accept that, then fine. I'm not gonna say don't do it. I'm not gonna say, not to do certain exercises just because of that. It's just you have to be aware that down the road you may be dealing with consequences, injuries.
Well, another thing that's actually not an exercise is diet related.
Yeah.
And it either comes to not eating enough.
Oh, sorry.
You came up with your idea?
I guess sticking with leg extension.
Okay.
I think the other thing when we're dealing with bodybuilding or aesthetic exercises is just isolation movements. So we all use them way too often. And isolation movements are, essentially just movements that are focused on one joint. So it's like whether it's like a bicep curl, which is great. I do it with all my clients. I love bicep curls, but like they're just focused on one muscle. It's one movement that, how often do you do an actual curl during the day, or the leg extension, or any number of exercises? The more straightforward the movement and less dynamic the movement and the more, kind of unilateral, ignore those last two words. It didn't make sense. It was just me throwing in words to say it. But no, the more stable or kind of simple the move, again, single joint, those are good for building individual muscles. Like if I want to build my biceps muscles, then I'm going to, I want to do biceps curls. But those curls don't really impact like everyday life.
If you're
training for a sport that's not like bodybuilding, like they're not really going to help you all that much unless you're really weak or you need to, you specifically have a need for those muscles. Like, you want to build the strength in the muscles to a certain point, but like doing biceps curls isn't going to help, or doing leg extensions isn't really going to help all that much. Doesn't transfer. It's not as efficient as doing other exercises.
Well, that's a good point. So too, while it might not hurt you, it's almost a waste of time.
Yeah, not that it's a waste of time. It's just it doesn't have the same chance. It's like, for example, if I want to build my quadriceps, doing squats are going to transfer to more movements, or doing lunges will transfer to more movements and more activities than doing a leg extension.
Like, it's also better for your
overall squat health all day long whenever you sit down. You know, in most sports, if there's any kind of jumping component, you're doing some form of a squat or a lunge. So squats are going to be a far more efficient and effective exercise at building the quads for activities than doing leg extension. Because again, how often throughout your day do you just do leg extensions?
So there's a transferability
to dynamic movements and to multi-joint exercises, or like open chain exercises that apply more to like everyday life than just doing, you know,
of course,
biceps curls.
But of course, with squats, now there's also an inherent risk. It's a little bit of a dangerous exercise if you're not doing it with the proper
form.
Yeah,
so squats are one of those exercises. Yeah, you need good
form. Once again, the range of motion, you have to be careful. Not everyone can go down super far, right? Also, the back, you have to keep your back straight. And if you put on a lot of weight, the more weight you put on, the more risk.
Well, yeah, as you get heavier, so again, another aesthetic thing is the heavier the weight. Generally, you know, some combination of weight and repetitions are going to give you a certain amount of volume that will help you grow. And so generally, we have to keep increasing variables in order to make progress. So, you know, if you want to build muscle, you've got to increase the weight essentially. So at some point you get to a point where it's really hard to increase the weights. And so the more you add the weight, you know, the harder your body has to work to keep it up. And again, you're always, you know, the harder you have to work, or the more intensely you have to work in any one movement, the higher the risk of injury, you know, in those moments. So again, if you're training for aesthetics, you're likely going to be pushing the weights. And as you push the weights, just there's always a risk. So you want to make sure that you're progressing properly. So, you know, if you're struggling with the bench press and you're doing full range, you know, if you're struggling with 200 pounds, let's say, then, you know, you probably don't want to quickly jump to 210 until you can kind of comfortably get the 200 pounds up for 6 reps or 8 reps or whatever. You know, you don't want to say, let's say you struggle and do three reps of, you know, 200 pounds. You probably don't want to jump up to 210 to try to do that again. You want to try to be more comfortable with the heavier weight before you start increasing more.
Yeah, it's good advice. So I guess what I started mentioning was the dangers that could come along with not having a proper diet. So one thing that people do, I'm sure you've seen, is just crash diets. They just stop eating.
Yeah.
Right, which is not good for your health on many levels.
Yeah.
Or people might take it an extreme diet choice such as Atkins. People believe that the ketosis might help you look great because you'll burn all this fat. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of evidence that it's actually very, very harmful.
Yeah.
There's people that have fainted. I think people have even died from the effects of having extreme diets.
Well, yeah, sure, absolutely. I think, again, anything extremes that we've talked about it with Tony is not good and not healthy, and in long term isn't going to benefit you. Now, again, risk reward. So I am a good example of this, right? Like when I've competed, I have to go on an extreme diet of my own in order to lose weight. And that extreme diet involves, you know, cutting significant amounts of water
weight. Don't you make sure that you get the right nutrition?
Yeah, like but again, no matter what, that last week before, just like, you know, even with a bodybuilding competition, you know, you're going to extremes no matter what.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if I'm water loading and then cutting all my sodium and losing, you know, 10, 15 pounds of water weight, that's not healthy no matter how you look at it. Sure, while I'm eating my 1,200 calories a day for the week before the fight, I'm eating a balanced meals. It still is not enough calories. I'm malnourished. I'm not getting enough water, you know, not getting enough nutrients. So, you know, those extreme diets, again, you have to make that decision. Like, I'm going to go on an extreme diet because my goal is to look a certain way. But, you know, you're the risk in that case then is that you're potentially doing damage to your health. I remember what my thought was from earlier, and it kind of applies here. Yeah. So let's say you have a bodybuilding competition, then you might say, okay, if you're thinking about the risk reward of like doing a ton of steroids and a ton of dieting, right, to for a competition, well, it may balance more in favor of doing it because you have a competition. That's your sport. And so if you're doing that as a sport, you assume some of those risks that come with doing, you know, whatever it is, the amount of drugs or dieting and weights and all that, all the stuff that comes with it. You're essentially assuming that risk because that's what you're doing. That's your activity. So I can, you know, it's acceptable. But some people just want to do it to look good at the beach.
Sure.
And so then you have to ask, like, why is that that important? And why is it that important? Like, I knew people who did quantities of drugs that you would normally see just in, like, you know, professionals, but they were just doing it to go to look good. And then again, you have to, like, kind of ask, like, why is that important to you? Why are you doing so much? Like, is that really necessary? Do you need it? Then that's when I would start to question, you know, or do you realize, like, how healthy it is? Because again, it's one thing to do it, you know, even baseball, like, it may be morally wrong, or any sport really, you know, any sport that doesn't kind of, where it's not acceptable, right? Like in any of the major sports, like, yeah, it's morally wrong to juice up. But if that's the difference between a $150 million contract and being out of the league in a couple of years, like, I can understand why it's morally wrong, but I don't blame the person for doing it. You know, you just sucks if you get caught, but you can't blame somebody that's life-changing for you and five generations down the line, sure, if not more, where, you know, if you're just, again, if you're just doing it to kind of look good at the beach or to impress some people, like, I don't know, you know, how smart that is. Even with me, when I was doing for kickboxing, I only competed as an amateur in a few times. So the level of weight cutting I did probably was stupid, you know, compared to the rewards, because my reward was nothing. My reward was, yeah, get my hand raised and win a fight. Like, the risk was severe health, you know,
sure,
effects. So, you know, where, yeah, if you're in the UFC, makes sense to cut 30 pounds or whatever you got to cut and do all that extra work, because, you know, there's a big contract and there's a lot of money and fans and social media followings and all this stuff that goes with kind of building your name. But for, you know, me as just an amateur Muay Thai fighter with no fights and no name, like, that was kind of dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, again, you always have to think about that. And I think me now would probably tell me then, like, nah, fight at a higher weight. That's,
yeah,
you know.
Which is dangerous. Probably,
which is dangerous in itself. Fight somebody 10 pounds heavier than you fought the other one. So, yeah, I guess no matter how you look at it. I guess amateur fighting in general is just kind of stupid.
Like, or fighting in general is dangerous.
Well, again, no, fighting's built into us. So I can see fighting, but, like, amateur fighting is kind of crazy. Yeah, like, what, you're gonna risk brain damage? For what?
For nothing,
like, and, yeah, and me, I never had I started too late to have any aspirations of ever being a pro. Like, I think I'm athletic enough that if I put my mind to it, and I started young enough, I don't know that I would be, you know, a huge fighter, but I probably could have done well, at least done professional. But, you know, I was, and no point was I kind of, did I have any aspirations? So I was like, well, and I know many people who do that, who fight amateurs, who just do it for fun. And yeah, it's like, it's kind of dumb.
That's fun, then enjoy it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so I guess the sort of the next thing, and one that is very, very common, one that you talk about a lot, is imbalance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So people love to have big arms and big chest, and they neglect their core, or they neglect you know, their muscles in their legs, and just they start favoring things, leads to injury.
Yeah.
I know imbalance is really a common source for injury.
Yeah. So yeah, depending on if it's aesthetics, you tend to see a lot of work on muscles that look good and not as much work on muscles that are there that are just as important, but, and maybe even more, like, for example, if you're, you know, like the shoulders, like you work the deltoids, like that, you're doing it because it looks good. But all that stress and the rotator cuff muscles are all going to be dealing with a lot of that. So it's especially important that you're working on kind of keeping the rotator cuff muscles strong and working and stable, because that's your last line of defense if something goes wrong. Mm. And so if those muscles are weak, or if those muscles aren't reacting at the right time, or in the right, you know, there's potential for injury. But you don't really see the rotator cuff muscles. So, you know, no one really works on them unless there's an injury. Or even worse, though, I see people doing rotator cuff exercises with really heavy weights. And that's not the purpose of those muscles aren't meant for heavy weights. You know, they're meant to kind of keep the shoulder, the it's a ball and socket joint, and it's meant to keep the ball in the socket. It's not meant to be lifting heavy weights. So even worse than, like, not training the rotator cuff muscles is doing, like, way too heavy weight with rotator cuff exercises. So, and then we see a lot of pushing movements. We see lots of, you know, we see, you know, unless we're looking in a mirror, you know, we don't see our backs. So we see lots of work on the front but not as much work on the back. So there tends to be this imbalance of, you know, kind of everything is, you know, the shoulders are internally rotated and the chests are tight. And, you know, maybe people do heavy lat work, but the upper back is weak and the hamstrings can be weak and the glutes are weak often. You know, I think it's a little different in bodybuilding where they have to focus on each individual muscle. But for the average person, they become very front heavy.
Yeah.
And so imbalances happen. And then over time, that imbalance only gets exacerbated. And so then you deal with some kind of an injury, whether it's an overuse type of injury or an underuse type of injury. And so that's something to avoid. You know, then you deal with posture problems from that, movement problems from that. And often we won't see it in the moment, but 10, 15, 20 years down the line, you know, it does start to, you know, have an effect. And then again, you have to kind of decide, like, do you know, is it, you know, for some people it's not worth their time to focus on that because that's not their, you know, their thing is I want to get my biceps bigger, I want to get my chest bigger. And so it's hard to kind of get into somebody's head that, yeah, while you want to look better, it's still important to work. And honestly, you know, one of the easiest ways to look better is to have the right posture.
Sure.
You know, it's so easy. If you can stand up right, open your shoulder blades, bring your shoulder blades together, stand up right, like just fixing people's posture often will make them look bigger and more solid and look better without doing anything, you know, muscularly. So it's important, but for a lot of people, they don't see that. They just kind of see, they're kind of like, I need to build my arms, I need to build my chest or whatever, you know, whatever their own kind of goal is.
Well, you mentioned overuse, and I think that that's something else that, that commonly might contribute to something that's not great for the health. And running is a prime example. People love to run, and they do it to keep the fat off. And without realizing, if you've been running for years, when you run, you won't. While it's still a great exercise, no one's going to deny that running is not a great exercise to do. If your body's adjusted, you might not be burning the same number of calories, but you know how when your body adapts to something, it doesn't get the same benefits or you have to do it quite a bit more. So people just might run more and more and more, right, to try to keep the weight off or what they're thinking is keeping the weight off or staying healthy. But by doing tons of running, it's been known to cause some injuries, like you're putting stress on the joints, on the knees, and just by doing a ton of one exercise can lead to injury.
Yeah. Well, so everybody's different. So I think there are a couple things to look at here. First is I know people who've been running for 70 years. And they've never had an injury. And then there are people who get injured right away, you know, within weeks of running. So now they're generally, most people I know that engage in any activity on any extended period just deal with overuse injuries. It's just part of any activity. You do anything too much. And again, we're dealing with some kind of an imbalance. You're dealing with something or some joint or some muscle or something just moving too much and doing too much of the same thing. And so overuse injuries are common. So now injuries in running kind of can come from two places. So it can come from one or, you know, or combination two. So it can come from, like we talked about, just overuse, overdoing it. It can also come from bad form. So a lot of times, I can't tell you how often I see people just running with bad form. So if you're running with bad form, now you're dealing with both the overuse, potentially the overuse, but also you're just dealing with potential for injury because there are already decent amount of forces going into running. But if you're running properly, it's really not that, there's not that much impact if you're doing it, if you're running, you know, with the right stride and the right movement. It really is minimal, the like impact forces, it's still there to an extent, but it's not that bad. It's not the impact that's as bad for your body as just the repeating the movement. But if you're running with bad form, then it can be kind of a jarring movement, and that combined with the repetitive motion, or, you know, some combination of that can lead to injuries. So, you know, there are two parts to the running thing, or any activity that you're doing a lot of, is A, again, like I said, doing it with bad form. And then B is doing it repetitively. I can think of even like, you know, I do Muay Thai. So with kicking, you'll see all kinds of different kicks. And, you know, if you look at the way some people kick, there's a lot of torque in a lot going on in the hips. And that you can easily see, it's a violent movement, a lot of turning, a lot of motion, and that could potentially cause injuries to the hips. You know, and hip and knee injuries are fairly common because of the positioning. But if you look at the way other people kick, some people kick very efficiently where the hips and everything isn't lined up in a way that when they're throwing the kick, it's very, there's nothing being overdone. There's no, you know, the motion is pretty straightforward, pretty simple, and there's minimal kind of impact or shearing forces or torque on the body. Like there's enough to produce movement, but not so much that you see, you know, where there's real potential for injury or more than any other activity. So I see that, cause that's I see that every day. And that's one of those things where you can see the difference between doing something with good form or doing something with bad form. And then again, for some people, it might be bad form for the body, but it's good form as far as effectiveness for the movement. So, you know, there's also that. So again, you go back to, well, risk reward. So is it worth you kicking like that for the, you know, risk of injuring yourself? We had, in my old gym, there was a couple of coaches who were working with a woman who was an Olympic caliber sprinter. And I forget if she was in the Olympics or was in the trials, but anyway, we were assessing her own form, and her form when running was terrible. But she was a high level sprinter. So, you know, my thought was, well, their thought was she's running this well in spite of her bad form. My thought was, and we never, you know, studied this long enough, or I didn't follow it up long enough to know if they ever came to a real conclusion. But my thought was, no, she's running this well because of her bad form. Like if they correct her form, they may reduce her risk for injury, but I thought that she would not run as well. And I don't know if they ever actually tried to change her form or do anything. But again, it comes down to, is it worth you being in the Olympics for the injuries that are going to come with running with that bad form? And from there, it telling me she had back problems and hamstring issues. But you can't argue with the results, because at the level of sprinter she was, you know, she was running with that kind of form. So, you know, it's tricky, because you have to ask, like, what's worth it, you know? If you could be the greatest, you know, guitar player that ever lived, but you would have arthritis, you know, at 50, you know, severe arthritis where you couldn't play, would you take that?
Mm. I don't know. this is a tough one. So, all right, I got one more, but is there anything that you can think of?
No.
I think we covered them?
Yeah, I think we covered everything for now. I'm sure there's a lot more that if you're listening, you could probably, you can write in, tell us what we're missing, because I'm sure we're missing a lot, but what?
So the last one that I'm going to say is ignoring your body. Mm-hmm. So working out, even though you know you may have an injury or you might be sore, or not just sore, but you have something that's more than just sore, you're working and you're pushing yourself, even though that voice inside is saying, you know, maybe take it easy. You know, we've debated this in the past that, yeah, sometimes you just have to work through a little soreness, but you should not be pushing yourself through an injury. And I know you've seen people do it before, right? They should have maybe had something checked out, but they work through it, they push themselves, and sure enough, they make their injury worse.
Yeah. There's a fine line here, because there's a, you know, it's no, you have to, I think in addition to ignoring your body, there's also knowing your body. So for some people, they're going to take this as like kind of a permission to not exercise next time they don't feel like exercising. Yeah. So you also have to know when are you just being lazy, and when are you legitimately like feeling lethargic? Because sometimes, you know, this happens a lot when people start. They get into a groove and they really get into it and they go solidly and they overdo it. And then on the back end, they start to feel tired and lethargic. And so you want to figure out like what part of that is me really being overtrained and run down, and what part of that is me just being lazy. And so again, I don't want to give permission to like not work out anytime you feel like not doing it. Otherwise, none of us would ever work out. Well, many of us would. I think according to you, we do it. We exercise because we love exercise. But yeah. We had this argument before. Uh-huh. But you know, you want to know what the signs are, your body's signs are for like when you're hurt versus when you're just tired versus when you're lazy or when you're run down, when you need the break versus when you don't need the break. So it's, you know, you need to listen to your body, but you also don't want to, like, you don't want to ignore it. Like the whole no pain, no gain thing is not true. No. So if you're in pain, then either, you know, rest, go to a doctor, or, you know, do, if it's your knee, then don't work your legs, you know, if it's your shoulders, and, you know, leave the shoulders alone for a couple of days. Like you kind of have to know, you know, the difference between what's this pain of like effort, pain of soreness, and what's the pain that's like, you know, okay, this is hurt.
And I think sort of to add on to that is to listen to your physicians. I think that people might do things too quickly if they've had a procedure, surgery. People say, "Oh, I feel fine," so they'll go back into training or doing something, and sure enough, they'll have an injury again. So I think that that's
well. Listen to the specialist. I would say. I think I'm more along the lines now. Like if you have an injury, then yes, do what the therapist or the doctor that you're dealing with, who's dealing with that injury with you, what they think is best, and go through the proper rehab and, take the extra time. Don't just jump back into things because, you got the itch and you got to get back into it, because that may lead to longer term injury.
All right. Well, we have an Ask the Trainer, and it comes from Rebecca M. And she asks, "My doctor told me that I'm not supposed to run anymore, but that I am allowed to walk. So I'm wondering if walking with an incline on the treadmill is as effective as running, and if so, how much incline should I use?"
All right, so there are a couple parts to that question that we'd want to address. So I guess first would be, what's the nature of the injury? If, for example, it's, I'm just thinking, if it's a lower back injury, then it's possible that the incline would be fine. It's just that the kind of impact of the running might be an issue, where if it's like a knee injury, then there might be an issue with doing the incline in addition to the impact of running on a treadmill. So, I would say, the first thing is, it'd be knowing why you can't run versus walking. The second part is generally going at an incline. Generally, the advice is like not to run at an incline. You typically don't want to run at an incline, especially if there's an injury. Or if you're going to run at an incline, it should be a fairly low incline or low grade. Walking at an incline is fine, and it's a good way to get the cardio if you're not running. But like I said, depending on the nature of the injury, I would say find out from your doctor whether or not the incline will actually make it more harmful for whatever the injury is. So those two parts aside, the third part is to answer the question of the effectiveness. Really, whatever gets your heart rate up is going to be the most effective. So, for the most part, the goal is get your heart rate up, and however you need to do that. So if all things being equal, if it's just about, you getting the heart rate up, then if walking an incline does it as well as running, that's fine. Or biking does it, or if rowing does it, whatever is going to get your heart rate up for the period of time you need to get it up for the most part, that's all that matters, unless there's there are other factors, if you're playing sports or other activities. Now, if you're planning on running a marathon, obviously, or you're playing basketball, then walking in an incline won't be as effective as running, because those are more related to the actual activity. But again, as running has been contraindicated, or which is just fitness speak for you can't do it, or medical speak for it, since that's the case, then like I said, I just make sure that the incline is okay and safe for whatever your injury is. And as long as you can get your heart rate up doing that, go ahead and do that. All right, cool. Well, as usual, if you have any questions that you want answered on the podcast, send it to thegymwits@gmail.com. And all of our stuff is at thegymwits.com, so all of our social media and stuff. And if you haven't yet, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Every review helps. It helps our rankings. And that is it. So I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Gild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.